supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we have an intriguing question of the week for you later in the show. It concerns the hardy orange, a tree that produces what sure looks like oranges all the way down to a chilly USDA Zone 5. Can we grow our own breakfast drink? We'll let you know later in the show, but mostly it's phone call day, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Nancy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Nancy. How are you?
I'm doing really well, thanks.
Very good. And where is Nancy really well?
In Macungie, Pennsylvania.
Ah, beautiful downtown Macungie now.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. What can we do for Nancy in the Lehigh Valley?
I have an asparagus question. I was digging out some of my daffodil bulbs and trying, because I haven't, they didn't bloom very much, and I suppose they were too far underground, and darn it if they weren't mixed up with the asparagus roots. And I also have echinacea in there that's taking over. And so between the bulbs and the echinacea, I don't know whether my asparagus is even going to survive, but I wanted to give them the best chance to produce for us next spring. And I wondered if you could tell me how sensitive their roots are, because it seemed like a couple of them were being choked off by the bulbs.
Well, I've heard of companion planting, but this seems to be bad companion planting. This is
absolutely.
Like, how the devil did you get daffodils mixed in with your asparagus?
Well, actually, I think when we had planted the asparagus, we really didn't expect it to take off like it did.
When did you plant the asparagus?
I think it must have been around, at least 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay, so how was your patch this spring?
It was pretty good.
After you finished harvesting your asparagus, you let you let a couple of spears go to the fronds to collect energy for the following year, right?
Yes.
And the rule, just for those who don't know, is when the new spears coming up in the spring are no bigger than a pencil, that's when you stop.
Oh.
Yes. Otherwise, if you keep, I know the little ones are the best tasting, which is why you're supposed to harvest them while they're young. But they have to be a fat enough size that they're going to have enough biomass to catch solar energy over the summer to restore the patch.
Oh.
So in the future, you want to stop harvesting when the new spears coming up are smaller than a pencil in diameter.
Okay.
Now, you have no clue where these daffodils are now. There's
Yes. Well, I kind of see it's next to
what,
a sidewalk.
What, do you got a metal detector that you can set to daffodils?
No, next to a sidewalk, and they're absolutely gorgeous when they bloom, but we haven't separated them in years, and I knew this was going to happen.
Okay. All right. Here's what we're going to do. Right now, we're going to do the smartest thing gardeners can do.
Okay.
Which is turn on the television, shred leaves for compost. We're not going to go digging. Yeah, we're not going to go digging up dormant plants.
Okay.
Now, in the spring, let the daffodils come up and let's see if they bloom.
Alrighty.
Then, when the daffodils either show you that they're not going to bloom or they're finished blooming, then I want you to dig them up.
Okie doke.
And I want you to, I do this every year anyway with my tulips and crocus so that squirrels don't eat them over the course of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring those daffodils inside and hang them like in the basement, in a cool garage, someplace like that, and mesh onion bags or something, and replant them next year after Halloween.
Okay.
Somewhere not near the asparagus.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yes, right.
And when the echinacea comes up, I want you to kind of flood that area and then very gently, trying not to disturb more spears than you have to, get in there and lift up the echinacea plants very gently.
Okay.
You got to flood the area. You got to make the area soaking wet.
Yep.
Try to be careful around the spears, but if you get right down, and you can't yank like a man, you have to pull slowly out of wet ground. But echinacea will come up root and all. And then you can do that at any time of day, but plant them in the evening in their new spot, also far away from the asparagus.
Well, I tell you, a couple of the echinacea and asparagus plants look like they're actually dancing together. They're just, you know, they're one and the same.
I'm not sure that the kind of dancing is legal in Pennsylvania. Right? So, you know.
It is in Macungie, I guess.
Yeah, anything goes in Macungie now, sure. So that's the plan. Harvest those daffodils and move them next spring. Get the echinacea out of there as soon as you can recognize what it is.
Yes,
Stop harvesting a little earlier than you have been, and that patch will recover no matter what happens.
Okay, great.
All right, Nance?
Very good. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck with your bad companions.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
So long now.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Eric, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. Good to hear from you.
It's good to hear from you, Eric. Where are you, sir?
I'm calling out of Kansas City.
Oh, all right. Very good. Which Kansas City?
Kansas City, Kansas, actually.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Eric in KCKS?
I'm starting up a couple of new raised bed gardens in my backyard.
Good.
I have freshly broken hard clay soil.
Okay.
Really hard-packed clay soil, probably hasn't been disturbed for 100 years or more.
Good. You should disturb it greatly and just throw it out of there.
So I double-dug these two gardens, dug them down a good 24 inches, and started to mix in some homemade compost to loosen it up, give a little drainage. And while I was working on this, I had the fortune of running across some zoo manure. The local zoo composts their elephant and other herbivore manure.
Mm-hmm.
So I got about a cubic yard of this elephant compost.
Okay.
I'm looking to mix that into the garden and put it to use and maybe even use it as a top dressing on the yard.
And did they give you an NPK rating on their zoo do?
They didn't have an actual measurement, an actual analysis available, but on their zoo website, they say that they expect it to range from 1.22
2.22. Okay. I have actually experience with elephant manure. When the circus would come to town, they would often, you know, for publicity, give away their elephant poop to gardeners who wanted to take it home. And I found the best use for that was to mix it in with my existing compost to kind of level things out. Now, you say you make your own compost. What do you make compost out of?
Mostly garden waste, lawn waste, kitchen scraps, things like that. I throw in a few sticks and leaves whenever I can. But
And I hope your lawn isn't treated.
No, it's not.
Okay, but you're not making really good compost. You can't with those materials. This is the time of year you need to get yourself together to make real compost. You need to harness your fall leaf fall. You need to get a leaf blower that's set on reverse. You need to shred up all your fall leaves, and I mean mountains of them. You got a cubic yard of elephant poop. I want you to get 3 cubic yards of shredded leaves, and then mix all that stuff together. Leave your grass clippings on your lawn from now on. You're starving your lawn to death. They're just pure nitrogen. They don't make good compost. The truth is that American yard waste compost is made out of fall leaves. Everything else that gets tossed in there either slows the process down or may help it a little bit. But if you shred up a lot of your fall leaves and you mix it 50-50 with this big truckload of zoo do and let it sit over the winter, then you got something that'll be nicely balanced. It'll help you because I presume you want to use your raised beds to grow the traditional peppers and melons and tomatoes and things like that.
Yes, I do. Now, does it make any difference that this zoo-doo has already been composted?
Yes. It means that it won't help your leaves break down quickly. over the winter time, but it's still a great material. Without a total accurate analysis of it, I would not use it alone. By mixing it in with your fall leaves and then using the composted material from that, you guarantee you're going to make super-duper compost. And then you can decide in the spring to either till it in or top-dress it with your raised beds. If you till it in, make sure you only work when the soil is dry.
I'll do that.
Okay.
Now, if I make a pile that large, I may have some leftover, more than I can use in my garden.
That's what everybody says. That's what everybody says. And they get to August, and they go, where did it all go?
So can I use that also as top dressing on my lawn or around my flowers, such as roses, hostas, and other ornamentals?
Absolutely. All right, Eric?
All righty. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Good luck, sir. And in the future, take as much of that elephant poop as you can, but always be ready to mix it with shredded leaves, and don't let another leaf fall go. That is God's perfect fertilizer.
Will do. Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Good luck, sir. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll be honored to once again host the Empty Bowl Benefit Dinner for the Homeless on Wednesday evening, November 20th, at a new location this year, the Lutheran Theological Seminary on Germantown Avenue in Philadelphia. Then I'll lead a trip to Cuba to explore their botanical wonders this coming January 14th to the 22nd. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the orange that's hardy outside of Philadelphia, north to Syracuse even. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers gift certificates, both traditional and e-cards, that can help make holiday giving easier. Burpee gift certificates are available online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, are there really citrus plants that are hardy outdoors in the mid-Atlantic states and the Northeast? We'll explore the concept of hardy citrus after lots more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Julie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I've been waiting so long to talk to you. You're like the man that knows everything.
Well, we'll take care of that misimpression pretty quickly here. Where are you, Julie?
I'm down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh, and how's the weather?
Well, it's hot and hot.
Okay, good, good, good. What can we do for Julie, who is hot in Fort Lauderdale?
Well, this is my issue. I bought a condo, single-story condo, so I'm on the ground. I have my own little fenced-in backyard. And I bought two plumeria trees that did wonderful the first I'd say 2.5 years that I had them. And then after about 2.5 years, they started getting that, like, a powdery brown substance that was underneath the leaves. And I noticed that the leaves every year would get smaller and smaller, fewer, fewer, less flowers, less flowers. In the meantime, I tried to use the bloom bursts and, you know, all the things that you warn us not to do because it's, you know, not organic. But that's all I really had access to down here because we don't do composting. And so I tried that. It would work a little bit, but I kept having this powdery substance issue. I tried to figure out if it was something maybe to do with the soil being too wet because we're always so humid with so much rain down here. And I do have weed block down to help with the weed growth. And then I also changed from the regular mulch, which I had seen would grow little mushrooms here and there. And I thought, well, maybe that's adding to the problem. So I changed to rubber mulch.
Oh, my goodness.
I've tried everything that I can think of, and I've even sprayed fungicides on the trees themselves, and it's not doing any better, and the trees are looking worse and worse.
Okay. I think you've done way, way too much. Now, the plumeria is a very tropical tree, native to Cuba, parts of Mexico. Maybe I'll see plumerias when I go to Cuba in January. And yours are in the ground.
Yes, they're in the ground.
Are they surrounded by a lawn?
They're surrounded by the weed block that I have down to help with the weeds and covered with a thin layer of rubber mulch.
Okay.
So no grass.
Right, okay. Well, the wood mulch is the thing that caused your mildew, which is what you had, whether it was downy mildew or powdery mildew. But the wood mulch breeds those disease organisms. Now, the rubber mulch doesn't breed those disease organisms, but you do realize that in the tropics, Mother Nature does not go around with a giant grinder and grind up old tires and wrap them around the plants. All of this stuff is unnatural. And, Julie, you are wrong. There are many organic products available in Florida. A couple years ago, I had a great opportunity to do a gig in Boca Grande and went around to a bunch of different nurseries and was thrilled to see all different kind of compost and organic supplies. You're not going to find it at the big box stores, but all the independent nurseries I went to had wonderful organic stuff.
Well, now, it's funny that you say that because when I was up in Gainesville, where the North Florida, there's, and also down in the Keys, there was an independent, you know, nursery like what you're talking about. And I went in and I asked that person because those people seem more knowledgeable than any of the big box places. And so I said, this is my problem. They said they thought, without seeing the tree, of course, that maybe it was something called rust. They suggested that I get this stuff that I'm looking at right here. I kept it so I could ask you about it. It's called Garden Sulfur. It's an all-natural acidifier. It's organic. And then also a copper soap liquid fungicide. They thought that might help, but I haven't used it yet.
Okay. Both of those things are organically approved. I don't know that you need them, and it seems like you've used an awful lot already. I would give these poor plants a rest. You know, as you know, when you get into your shorter days down there, it's natural for these trees to drop a couple of leaves and go a little bit dormant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want you to get rid of these crappy mulches. I mean, I'd rather look at the naked landscape fabric than rubber mulch or wood mulch.
Okay.
And are these mulches touching the plants?
Not really, because you've got that weed block layer in between.
Well, what do you mean by that? Is the weed block up against the trunk of the plants?
There's a hole cut through it, you know, because it's like one big sheet of like kind of like a material idea, but it's permeable to water and stuff.
Yeah, that's what they tell you. Yeah.
Yeah, the hole is cut for the tree.
Yeah, I would cut back the weed block. I would get out there with like a carpet knife, a box cutter, and I would cut some of that weed block out of there. And I would make sure the trees had a good solid foot of nothing. around their trunks. They're having trouble breathing. They're not getting air and water to their roots. Can you take a hose out to the trees?
Oh, yeah.
Have you tried just blasting the powder off with sharp streams of water?
You know, I do, but I have tried that. But the rust seems to be mostly underneath the leaf itself.
Right. You got to get down there.
It doesn't really want to come off as well as you think. I'll go out and I'll sort of be proactive and take the leaves that are already brown and are kind of wanting to fall off.
Good.
If I pull that off, the dust just like floats away in the air like actual dust.
Okay. And does it look like the color of rust?
Yes.
Then I think that you can choose whatever you're going to feel lucky. Give it a soap copper treatment or give it a sulfur treatment, but don't do both. And
okay.
And go light. And do you prune these trees?
No, you know, I just let them go.
You know, you're supposed to be pruning them.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I didn't know that.
You're supposed to be pruning them all summer long to keep them open to prevent disease because of your humid conditions.
I don't even know where to start with that.
Well, you're going to go online. You're going to go to the Florida State Extension Service, okay. And you're going to read their bulletin on pruning plumerias. Okay. And they'll tell you, but you need to open the tree up, let more airflow get in there. That may naturally solve the problem as well.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all your help.
Good luck, Julie. Enjoy the warm.
Thank you.
Enjoy your warm winter while we're scraping ice dams off our roof.
Yeah. Well, you can always come for a visit.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
All right, Julie.
Good luck.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Alexander, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Michael.
How are you, Alexander?
I am doing very well.
And where is Alexander doing well?
I'm in Yardley, Pennsylvania, a suburb of Trenton.
Okay, very good. What can we do for you, sir?
I have a lawn that is full with strawberry. It's almost no grass, mostly this little wild strawberry weed.
Okay, so when you say wild strawberry, very long, skinny vines that every once in a while produce a pretty yellow flower and then a little piece of an edible fruit.
Yes, it's very few of these little red berries that are not very good to eat.
No, they're terrible. There is a plant also called wild strawberry or alpine strawberry that's a clumping plant that produces impossibly tasty, tiny little fragrant strawberries, but obviously this is a very different plant. Now, you say you're in Yardley, which isn't all that far from Philadelphia, and you got no lawn left. What happened?
I don't know. I followed what you preach. I put an organic fall fertilizer on, and other than that, I don't really feed it, and I cut it 3 inches or maybe even 3.5 inches.
Okay, but you do have a lawn underneath the covering of strawberries somewhere.
Yes, there is a lawn, and you know, fortunately, the little grass blades, they grow a little higher than the strawberries. The strawberries are relatively low, and the good thing is it's all green, so I'm not that, you know, it's still a nice green, and nobody, unless you look closer, really sees it that badly.
Oh, so it doesn't actually sound like a problem.
Well, I just would like to have more grass than wheat.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot of things right, as you've learned all too well. Wild strawberry spreads by runners, like cultivated strawberries.
Yeah.
Your choices are, you know, if you want to hire a bunch of kids, and then when it's really wet, have them very slowly pull up all the runners they can, trying to get the root system out, and then continue your, and when you mow, you leave the clippings on the lawn, right?
Yes.
Okay. If you do a pulling party and you get a handle on this and you continue feeding in the spring, feeding in the fall, both naturally and cutting high, I don't see any reason your grass shouldn't be able to outcompete this. So if you are going to try an organic herbicide, which would be an herbicidal soap spray or Iron X or one of the other herbicides that it's based on iron. Iron is very kind to grass, but it's very bad for weeds. What you would do is you would try to pull up, you know, as much as you could in the fall and in the spring. And then when it gets to be the summer, just as the spring turns to summer and we start to get some hot days, you would very carefully go around with either the soap spray or the iron spray and just target the flowers. Just target those areas where the little strawberries are going to grow. Ignore the vines.
Okay.
Because it's only those little clusters that can absorb solar energy and keep the vine growing. So if you pull out some of the biomass, and then during the course of the summer when it's trying to photosynthesize, you keep killing those flowers and buds, I think your lawn should be able to overtake it without any trouble.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan. I didn't know the soap sprays and the iron X, but that is very good advice.
All right. Well, good luck, Alexander.
Thanks for your help, and it was a pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Peggy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Peggy. How are you?
Pretty good.
And where is Peggy pretty good?
Glen Mills, Pennsylvania.
Very good. Just outside of Philly. What can we do for Peggy?
Well, I'm calling about a previous call.
Okay. Go ahead.
There was a woman that called in last weekend. She was having a problem with a small clover-type weed. And
right,
I believe the name of it is oxalis.
Okay, so you think she has oxalis, which is a very common weed of it, mostly really wet areas, right?
Well, I don't really know all that much about it. I did become familiar with it when I worked at a garden center, and it was rather prolific in the pot. I have a little bit of it at home, but it's not a big problem.
Well, if she does have oxalis, I would think, you know, this is one of those weeds that has a distinctive dispersal method. Did you ever get shot by it?
Yeah, I have. In pulling the weed, you can feel the seeds pop. Yes.
Yeah, they come shooting out at you. And she didn't say anything like that. So I think if you have that weed, every time we get a question like that, people talk about not that it resembles clover or anything like that. They say, that's a weed that's shooting at me. It's got little guns. It's shooting its seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I will say we got a lot of phone calls and emails about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guesses were black medic, which is another weed that has yellow flowers.
Right.
And a couple of people thought it was sorrel.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that. But when she described those small yellow flowers, and it also does, a lot of times it does sort of have a purplish tinge to it. It just sounded like the oxalis. To me, that's the first thing that came to my mind.
Well, I don't think it is sorrel. I don't think the sorrel matches up with the color. I think black medic is like one possibility. Now, if it shoots seeds, you're definitely right. And the nice thing about either black medic or the oxalis is the dispersal is by seed. So if she does the corn gluten meal as a pre-emergent at the right time in the spring, she should be able to prevent this plant from spreading too rapidly.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
But that's, I thought she had buttercups. I don't, you know, there's so many weedy plants with yellow flowers after a while. You can go nuts. But, you know, that is one great use for, well, there's many great uses for our county extension services and county extension agents. But when you have a weed like that, if you really want to know what it is, and sometimes knowing the life cycle of the weed can really help you get it under control quickly, I would always urge people to either take a picture of it or to call their local extension office and make an appointment and take over a bunch of specimens, mm-hmm. and then they can get it identified.
Right.
But
right.
We'll put your guess into, we should have like a bingo thing going around with all the different guesses, because we got at least five or seven different people who were sure it was this plant, and they were all different plants.
Right. I actually even looked it up online, and it did. Sometimes they do refer to it as buttercup oxalis, but the flower is so much smaller than a buttercup flower, but it does resemble the buttercup flower.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of little yellow flowers like that on what other people consider weedy plants that look similar. You know, it all comes back to my philosophy of lawn and garden care. Is in most instances, unless you've got a hyper-aggressive weed like bamboo or thistle, the best way to go after weeds is indirect, is to build up the lawn or to, you know, make sure there's no bare ground in your flower beds and stuff like that. But it's interesting. I hope she's listening. And if her weed shoots seeds, we'll get back to you when we'll give you the official You Bet Your Garden no prize.
You know. Oh, that would be great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Peggy.
Okay. And it's a great show. I always get a lot of good, useful information out of it.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for calling.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind those of you listening to us on broadcast radio that shows like You Bet Your Garden wouldn't be on the air without the support of public radio members. And then it's fall pledge drive time at a lot of public radio stations around the country. So if you're just a listener, please consider becoming a member of your local public radio station. And if you already are a member, well, thank you for your support. But don't be checking your membership status just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the truth behind the fruit-bearing plant known as the Hardy Orange. I'm Hardy Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers gift certificates, both traditional and e-cards, that can help make holiday giving easier. Burpee gift certificates are available online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will delve into the mystery of the Hardy Orange, a fruit-bearing tree that bears what looks like oranges, and it can bear them all the way down to chilly zone 5. That's coming up after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Jan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. It's so nice to talk with you.
It's very nice to talk with you, Jan. How are you?
Very well. And you?
I am doing very well as well. Where is Jan doing well?
In Newtown Square, Pennsylvania.
All right, outside of Philadelphia.
Yes.
Very good. What can we do for Jan in Newtown Square?
Well, we have a bit of a mystery. 5 years ago, we bought a weeping cherry tree to celebrate the birth of our first grandchild.
Oh, how nice.
Yes, and on her birthday every year, we take her picture in front of the tree. Well, the tree has thrived for 5 years, and it was fine in late July. We went away on vacation, and it was very dead in late August. We can't quite understand. I did notice there's a hole in the trunk about 2 feet above the ground, and it doesn't appear to have been caused by an animal. We do have deer in the area. The other thing is the hole almost seems, it almost looks like it developed from the inside out, as though it was pushed out. And I don't know if that would be the cause of the tree dying. I'm completely perplexed.
Is the tree growing in or near a treated lawn?
No.
Is it mulched?
No.
Has it ever been fed?
Just, I believe, when it was first planted.
Okay, so.
But not since.
Right, and you guys planted it?
Yes, we did.
Did you buy it bald and burlapped?
Yes.
Did you take all that stuff off and throw it away?
Yes.
Yes. Huh. Okay. And you went away in July.
Mm-hmm.
And for how long?
We were gone for a month.
You were gone for a month. Okay. But, you know, even a five-year-old tree would not be subject to drought stress even in July because I can't remember exactly, but I think July was pretty cool and we had a lot of rain this summer.
Yes.
So nothing like that.
Yeah, it seemed very dramatic the way it went.
Yeah, very dramatic. How's the five-year-old?
Oh, the five-year-old is thriving, thankfully.
When's the last time you saw them?
This morning.
Oh, okay. Spooks me. Yeah, that's why I always tell people if they want to commemorate some person or everything, buy a bench.
Oh.
you don't get this bad feeling. You know?
Right.
How close is the tree to any neighbors?
Oh, it's in the center of our backyard, and it's quite a distance from neighbors.
Hmm. And you say there's only one hole.
Yes, there's only one hole.
And nothing weeping out of the hole.
No, as a matter of fact, a pruner man was here recently for another job, and I showed it to him, and he even exclaimed that the hole had healed itself.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing oozing from it. There's never been an indication of that.
There are what are called borers, B-O-R-E-R-S,
mm-hmm.
that attack fruit trees, even though yours is not a bearing fruit tree. It's mm-hmm. it's a form of the cherry tree. But I tell you, I had peach tree borers attack one of my best trees, and our fruit expert, Lee Reich, swore, you know, because the tree looked like a fly in amber. I mean, I must have had 100 holes in this thing.
Mm.
It looked like Yosemite Sam had got mad at it.
Mm-hmm.
And we got our best harvest of peaches, and it leafed out just fine. Now, you say you got back, and the cherry tree was dead, which means the leaves were brown or they had dropped already?
It was completely dark and hanging. I mean, and when I snapped a small twig, there was a little bit of green inside. Since then, since end of August, there is no green at all in it. It's quite dead. And the hole's a pretty decent size. I would say it's a good 1 inch by 1 inch, but then there's that bulging, which is almost a 4-inch diameter.
Well, it makes no sense. It makes
right.
no sense. Borers tend not to make one hole. If they did, it wouldn't. It wouldn't kill a tree. There are creatures that once, you know, woodpeckers or something have started pecking away at a hole, they'll enlarge it and live in it. But a lot of times even that doesn't kill a tree.
Mm-hmm.
The hole is a mystery. The hole may be a dodge. It might be a false trail.
Okay.
Everything else you're talking about is indicative of herbicide drift.
Okay.
You know, somebody in the neighborhood having something sprayed heavily on a windy day and your tree got a piece of it. But then I would also expect to see, you know, damage near your other plants. So you have,
right.
you have two options here, both of which you've already figured out. One is you can pull this puppy out of the ground and burn it on a funeral pyre now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe after you get it out of the ground, do some CSI, cut it open, see if you can find anything, see if an alien organism is developing inside.
Okay.
And plant a new weeping cherry because you're going to get real good deals if you can find one this time of year.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And this is a perfect time of year to put that kind of a tree in the ground, or you can leave your dead tree out there and see if it magically restores itself to life. But if the branches are brittle,
yes,
if the branches snap easily, I would probably get it out of there, see if you can find a new one. I would not plant it in exactly the same spot. I would plant it, you say you got a big backyard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'd plant it a couple feet away, at
okay.
least from wherever that was, and try to get one that like equals the size of the tree now and lie to the kid.
Good idea.
All right?
Yes.
All right, good luck. I'm sorry to hear it, Jan.
Thank you so much, Mike. I learn a lot from your program.
Yeah, I don't think you learned a lot from this call.
Oh. Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Peter, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm great.
And where is Peter great?
Up in Milford, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah? Well, where in Upper Milford? Powder Valley?
No, actually, between Shimerville and Seasholtsville.
Okay, sure. I know the Shimers very well, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah. All right. What can we do for Peter in the Lehigh Valley?
Well, I've noticed that some of my evergreen trees have some of the branches are turning brown, and then I've noticed throughout the Lehigh Valley that there's a lot of evergreen trees that some of the branches are turning brown, and I was wondering if this means death to the tree or if it's just a temporary condition.
Now, let's talk about your evergreens. What do you got? Do you know?
I can't tell you the exact name
Blue
of them.
Spruce.
They're probably some kind of a fir.
Oh, okay. And have they been on your property since before you owned the property?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Okay. My property goes back to 1790.
Okay. And are they growing in or near a lawn that's treated with herbicides?
No.
Okay, very good. Are they mulched?
Yes, they are.
With what?
Well, some of them aren't mulched. They're
right.
They just have, I believe it's called periwinkle growing underneath them.
Okay, that's not especially good for the trees. They like a bareness underneath them. The ones that are mulched with crappy chipped up wood?
Basically.
Yeah, is it dyed?
No.
Okay, good. And have you fed these plants?
No.
Okay.
They're big trees. They're 25, 35-year-old trees.
Good. Not everybody is as smart as you. A lot of people think they need to feed their trees. They do not, of course.
Okay.
Is that mulch touching the trunks of the trees?
No, it isn't.
I don't know. I'm putting them up to the polygraph here. You know, it's the You Bet Your Garden truth machine. You want always 6 inches clear around the base of the tree, and any mulch near the tree should never be deeper than 1 to 2 inches.
Okay.
So follow that rule. But it doesn't sound like you've done anything desperately wrong.
Okay.
Now, is the browning on the lower branches or throughout?
No, it's throughout the tree.
That's not a good sign. Are there things that look like pine cones on the outer tips of the branches?
Well, there were in the spring.
Right.
But there aren't now.
Okay. So the only thing that can come to my mind is bagworms, which are notorious pests of all kinds of evergreens. They love arborvitae, but they'll go after anything. And their nests look like pine cones.
Oh.
So if you get a sudden appearance of pine cones on an evergreen and it starts to turn brown, you want to get one of them and break it open and make sure it truly is a pine cone
okay. And
not a nest of really nasty little caterpillars. But you say there's, even if you had bagworms, you don't have any bags on the tree now.
No.
Is it possible that you are just going through what's called needle drop?
No, I don't think so. We have needle drop all the time.
Right.
And it's definite brown branches.
And it's throughout the tree, you say?
Yes.
Yeah. See, it's very normal for the lower branches of evergreens to brown out when they're not getting enough sun.
Okay.
But generally, the top of the tree from the middle up is always fully green. What about the very top of the tree?
No, the top of the tree looks fine.
Okay. You know, we have had these two really nasty Halloweens in a row.
Yes, we have.
Where, you know, 2 years ago we had the heavy snows while there were still leaves on the deciduous trees. That
right.
that cleared the forest quite a bit.
Right.
Then last year we had Sandy come through, and we just had an unnaturally wet summer. So the
right.
trees have been stressed.
Right.
You're not feeding them. It doesn't sound like the mulch is wrong. If you
nope.
want to do, if you want to do anything to help them, make sure the mulch is moved away from the trunk. Make sure
okay.
it's thin. I would move that periwinkle if that tree is suffering. But other than that, just hope for a normal season. There's absolutely nothing you can or should do. Now, if you notice white masses on the trees, or if you notice these bags, that's a different issue. That would be a pest problem.
Okay.
But let's just hope they're going through some sort of natural reaction to stress. And especially if the tops of the trees are healthy, that's your best sign.
Yeah, the tops of the trees look fine.
Yep. Go with that. You know, light a candle to the Blessed Mother and hope for the best.
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, Peter.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Is there really an orange that's hardy in cold climes? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please read us this week's oh-so-intriguing question.
Sure, Mike. We heard from Ron just north of Morgantown, Pennsylvania, who writes, "When I was a horticulture student at the Barnes Foundation, I picked up a couple of hardy oranges from a specimen they had. I successfully started the seeds, grew the plants in pots for years, and then planted one outside. This tree is gorgeous. Last year I got my first fruit, and this year there are over 100 fruits. I'm moving to Asheville, North Carolina next spring, and I'd like to take some seed with me to plant at my new place. I tried saving some seeds last season, but they dried out. Short of planting them now in pots, which I'd rather not do, is there a way to preserve the seeds and keep them viable for future plantings? Mike, is this possible, that you and I could grow our own oranges outside?"
Well, the phrase hardy orange sure sounded like an oxymoron to me, as I, quote, know that citrus trees only thrive where it don't never freeze, like down in Southern California and the hot parts of Arizona, Texas, and Florida. And sometimes even those crops are lost to cold weather. But I've also been hearing people talk about hardy oranges and hardy citrus for years, so...
So you called our resident fruit expert, Lee Reich.
You know it. And as usual, he smartened me up quite a bit. Hardy orange, he explains, is the common name for a plant called Poncyrus trifoliate, which is hardy outdoors where you and I live in and around Philly, and even further north of here, down to a fairly chilly USDA Zone 5. Also known as trifoliate orange, it's not a true citrus like lemons and limes, but it is a close relative. It's so close that it's frequently used as a rootstock for grafted citrus trees because of its exceptional hardiness. It even looks like an orange tree in fruit, leaf, and flower.
That's great! So why don't you have a couple of trees?
Because, to quote Lee, the fruit is barely edible.
So you can grow a tree that looks like an orange tree and produces fruits that look like oranges, but you can't actually eat them.
Oh, they're not poisonous. Lee says they have a taste that's vaguely reminiscent of an orange, but bitter. Some people use them to make marmalade, but that just may prove the old theory that any fruit tastes good if you add enough sugar to it. But Lee also points out that the tree is fragrant. Both the flowers and the fruits have a wonderful scent. And he adds that a variety called Flying Dragon is, quote, awesomely ornamental. The stems swirl around in a corkscrew shape, and it has amazing recurved thorns. Lee swears that the plant really looks dragonish, and he sent us a photo of his Flying Dragon that really proves it.
So, will our listeners' hardy oranges come true from seed?
Probably, says Lee. But he stresses that you have to plant those seeds immediately while they're still fresh. And Lee says that means right out of the fruit. So when our listeners' fruits are fully ripe, he should pick some and plant the seeds right away in a light soil-free mix in small pots. Lee adds that there is also a category of fruit called hardy citrus, Poncyrus, that has been hybridized with citrus and other citrus relatives like kumquat, which is also technically not a true citrus, to make hardier, more edible plants. Lee lists a few of these in his newest book, Grow Fruit Naturally, like the citrange, a cross between a hardy orange and a sweet orange that he says tastes like a slightly tart true orange.
Could we grow one of those here in the Northeast?
Unfortunately not. Lee says that while the trees are winter hardy down to 5 or 10 degrees Fahrenheit, they really can't deliver reliable fruit when grown outdoors north of Georgia. Apparently, the fruits need a really long growing season to mature, and that makes it very difficult to grow edible citrus outdoors out of its normal range. The trees can be real backyard fun, he notes, and it's always nice to try and grow some of your own fruit, but he adds that there's a reason these plants are uncommon. However, Lee is always quick to note that growing citrus in pots that can be brought indoors for the winter is a whole other story. Container growing opens up many possibilities for growing your own tasty citrus.
Wouldn't most citrus trees eventually get too big to handle?
Not if you're a brave enough caretaker. Lee explains that you can keep the plants to a workable size by repotting them and trimming back the roots every few years. Well, that sure was a lot of fun information about hardy citrus now, wasn't it? Luckily, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to leave me out overnight if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your target report, your Richard Brecky's teaming towards our garden short. At garden@whyy.org.
Please tell us where you live. Please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Charlie Kyer. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's internet illuminators. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our sweet and hearty staff includes editor Al Banks, production assistant Effie Kong, and Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm hearty but bitter Mike McGrath, and I'll see you again. Eating isn't the only danger that deer pose to your poor plants. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss how to protect the bark of tender young trees from being buckled by young bucks. Plus your fabulous phone calls.